Good evening, folks. This is The Weird Part. I am your host, Vincent Trewell, and my very special guest tonight is Mr. Steve Berg. Welcome aboard, Steve.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Vincent.
Hey, it's a pleasure to have you. We've met in person for the first time pretty recently. That was at Strange Realities conference in Nashville. And please tell our audience a little bit about it, if you would.
Yeah, I'd love to. So our mutual friends, Adam and Serpiel over at the Conspiranormal, wonderful, wonderful podcast, Conspiranormal.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're great.
Two
Those
thumbs
guys,
up.
And yeah, right. Adam's been at it for a while now. You know, he's one of the old dogs, the OGs. But they, for the last, I want to say 4 years or five, I'm bad with numbers, have been putting on this absolutely fabulous conference in Nashville, where they're from. It's called the Strange Realities Conference. And they, in my opinion, have some of the most diverse, interesting speakers. It's not the kind of place you go to see, you know, celebrities in the field necessarily, like the Richard Dolans of the world, but it's really just, it's people who are, I think, in my opinion, Vince, it's kind of like a place where newish thinkers go to hear lectures. You know what I'm saying? It's like, these are people who are having new ideas about UFOs and new ideas about the occult and new ideas about the paranormal. So I think it's kind of like, you know, it's a place where thought experiments go to have this wonderful existence. And I met Vincent this year. We just got back, gosh, about 2 weeks ago. And it was an absolutely, maybe the best year ever, I thought, just in terms of speakers, the vibe, the crowd. We had a great audience. But I was asked to be the MC, the master of ceremony for this thing. And it was just like a dream come true. I loved it. I'm so passionate about this stuff. So it was so fun. You and I got to hang, have beers, and you know.
So yes, I think you make a great point there that this isn't for a place where everybody has their mind made up about stuff.
Right.
This is much more open-minded than any similar conference I can think of, really.
Yeah, I think that's what makes this conference a little bit different than most. And, you know, it's not the only one that has, you know, speakers like this or kind of the radical open. You know, it's like everyone there is like very skeptical but radically open-minded. And I think that's such a great alchemical mix when you're dealing with these topics because,
absolutely,
you know, Vincent, I think you're kind of like me. When you meet someone who has certainty about any of this stuff, I tend to say, like, that's an interesting way to look at it. And I start backpedaling. I'm like, see you later.
Yes, yes, indeed. And yeah, you hit the nail on the head. Radically open-minded. And
yeah,
and you get such a diversity of subjects.
Yeah,
you'll have
you do.
True crime. You'll have unsolved mysteries.
Right.
You'll have magical practice. You'll have
right.
UFOs. You'll have Bigfoot. You'll have Bigfoot in UFOs doing magical things.
You'll have occult symbology of Stanley Kubrick films. I
yes.
mean, you know, you'll have like, I thought like Nathan Isaac, I love Nathan Isaac. I think he's one of the like just most exciting researchers today.
Oh, yeah.
And his talk about the cattle mutilation phenomenon in the 1970s was an angle I had never really heard. And I was like, my jaw was like on the floor. And I think he's onto something.
Oh, yes. That was extremely insightful.
Oh,
and
it was.
You get stuff that's just off the map. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I can't. I'll be honest. I'll probably never go to a standard like Bigfoot convention.
Yeah.
Where we're all going to talk about the different kinds of Bigfoot scatting.
I know.
I don't care about that. Okay.
I know.
This is a much bigger picture, a much, you know, nuanced way of looking at things.
It
and,
is.
And it's a can of worms in a good way. You open it up and things go in all directions.
You know, it is. And it's funny because I have, like, I guess, like, in the last, like, 2 years, started to, and not by any means a lot, but I am now getting asked to kind of speak at some of these, like, smaller conferences. And I did one in Iowa, like, this, not that long ago, in September. And it was most of the speakers, I mean, David Weatherly was speaking there, and he's got a very open mind, but, like, I went up and gave my weird Nebraska lecture, but I was also like, I don't know. I think some people were excited to hear my kind of open-ended, real weirdo take on a lot of this stuff. And there was a lot of, like, I will say, older people who were like kind of shaking their head, like, "Oh man, who's this bozo?" And I was also kind of doing a little bit of, like trying to make it funny because I think this stuff is very funny. I think the comedic aspect, absurd aspects are part of the point of this stuff, if there is one. And
I think
so,
that you're right. And being grimly serious about this stuff can get awfully dull,
It can get dull, and it really, like, you can. I think when I was younger looking into this stuff, I was super paranoid. I had like this real paranoid angle on it where like the government's lying to us. They're like, "Oh my God," like everything, like I was really into it in an X-Files way when I was younger. And that is kind of like filled with paranoia and psyops and being lied to and tricks and tapping of phones and all that stuff. And like that's fun and sexy when you're young. But like now at like in my in my older years, I'm like, man, I just want to talk about the phenomenon and like the weirdness of that and the patterns between different manifestations and motifs. And to me, that's where we can ask the richest and most exciting questions.
Absolutely, yeah. And the people that, kind of got me into this whole subfield were putting together that these things happen in seemingly very different phenomena, but they're really all one phenomena.
It
Maybe.
seems like, well,
Maybe.
yes, maybe. I mean, like, look, that's kind of like, I don't have, I'm like, we talk about, I'm not certain remotely in anything I say or anything I think about, but like, I do think we are, I have a hard time really parsing out and taking like too much stock in ghosts just being ghosts and Bigfoot just being Bigfoot, and then a Bigfoot is different from an alien black hat. It's like all these things, they behave, and there's just a lot of similarities in going back in time and history and even today, even in the areas you see this stuff. So like for instance, just an example, my neck of the woods, eastern Nebraska, the places where people are seeing Bigfoot also happens to be the places where people are seeing alien black cats, other little weird creatures, lights over the Missouri River. So it's, I just think, and if you, name a place, I mean, look, southern Wisconsin, where, I'm very obsessed with Wisconsin, and Wisconsin's got all the weirdness.
Yeah, we've got some very, very strange things here,
Yeah.
especially in
Oh,
the Driftless
tons.
region of the West, Southwest thing.
Absolutely. I did like a 3-day drive through it with a friend of mine this, like, I guess in May, and it was one of the best 3 days ever. I'm infatuated with Wisconsin. I think it's beautiful.
That neck of the woods, that Richland County, Driftless Region area is the only place where I've really had a cryptid sighting,
Oh.
and the only place where I've really had a very strange, well, one of the two places where I've had a very strange, what I would call a ghost experience.
Interesting.
And considering I don't go there that often,
Right. Right.
that was really, really something. And
Interesting.
there's something about that area.
Yeah.
I was visiting there a couple of years ago because my family is originally from there, but they moved away. And so I grew up in Fond du Lac County, which is a different part of the state, and I currently live in Milwaukee. And there's just a different vibe with that Richland County area that, and the more I've read about it, the more I've learned, holy crap, that happened there too. And this, and this, and this, and it is on one trip where nothing particularly paranormal happened. I still just had this feeling that it was a different kind of country. And I told my wife, I feel like I could see a leprechaun here. And I don't mean like a Lucky Charms, like a real one.
No, I hear you, man.
And it just felt like a very thin veil type area. And the next year we went back, and this is what happened. We were driving along. My wife was driving. Unfortunately, the one thing I don't like about Richland County is almost all the roads are single lane. You know, they're one lane in each direction, no
Yeah.
passing. You got people behind you. There's no shoulder to pull over on.
Hey, Vincent, let me just so I have a reference in my head, is that anywhere near Delavan or like where Beast of Bray Road took place? Richland?
Not that close.
Not that
That's
close. Okay.
more on the other side of the state, more on the
Okay.
western
Oh,
border.
okay. Okay. I got you now.
So we couldn't pull over, and we could only slow down so much. But as you know, that's a very hilly country, and a lot of what the farmers do there is they can only get the tractors up so steep a hill. So you'll have crops growing at the bottom of the hill, and you'll have the top of the hill is wooded because you just can't get machinery up there.
Yeah.
And so we're driving along, and out of nowhere, for about 5 seconds, we see this creature come hauling ass out of the cornfield. There's about 100 yards to wood to the woods. There's about 100 yards of open area, and we see this huge beast moving. And then we see it struggling, and it's kind of hopping to get up the hills that steep.
It was bipedal.
That's where it gets complicated.
Yeah, I hear you. It's, yeah, it's yeah.
Because it, we both had the impression that it usually walks upright, but that it had to get on all fours to kind of get up the steep hill.
Got you.
And what my wife saw was, well, she just said it was Bigfoot. We didn't talk about it until we got to the motel.
Right.
And I said, well, what did you see? And she said, I saw Bigfoot. It looked like the orangutan character in the current version of Planet of the Apes. He said, that's exactly what I saw. It usually walks upright, but it was hopping on all fours. What I saw was a bear, but not any bear that exists in nature. It was enormous. Okay, it was like the size of a small car, and it was multicolored. And
Really?
yes, bears don't really look like that, you know what I mean?
Oh, hell yes.
But it was doing the same hopping motion. And I wonder if just my mind couldn't process seeing a full-on Bigfoot. And that's why I saw a weird-looking bear. But we both
Yeah.
saw something, and we saw it at
What?
the roughly the same size, same motion, and we saw it at the same time, so I wasn't
Right.
just having a psychotic break, you know?
Right.
Because if God, I don't know what I would have done if I would have seen it alone,
Yeah.
you
Oh,
know?
I know. I know. You know, and like, yeah, I you know,
And
that's the one thing.
we couldn't, you know, pull over or pay it the attention we wanted to because we had people right behind us
Yeah.
and we're on this one lane road and it was gone in five, it was 5 seconds, it was gone.
Yeah, you kind of know you're not going to catch up to that. But you know, I do like, you know, because I like to tease these things apart. But you obviously, yeah, I'm sure you know this, would not be the first couple to have seen something, a cryptid or an entity of some sort or animal of some sort, and seen two completely different things.
Oh, yes.
In fact, it might have been in W.T. Watson's book about Canadian Bigfoot. I read so many books now I can't remember where I'm
I
pulling the stories out of
haven't
anymore.
read his
But
book, but I heard him interviewed by
they're
Sir Isaac.
very good. They're very
Oh,
good.
yeah.
His book about mist is really exactly the kind of thing I'm looking for these days. I really like this guy. Anyway, he I was one of the stories I recently read it was about a woman. She saw the bear and the guy saw the Bigfoot. So it
Wow.
was the opposite of what he did. But
Yes,
I mean, like, but
yes.
there's many cases. I'm looking at my bookshelf right now. Not only that, Vincent, which I'm sure you've heard, is that the same thing happens with UFO encounters,
Very
where
interesting.
people will see like someone. I know of a case offhand where someone saw like a spinning Ferris wheel, then someone saw like a 1950s Adamski type craft. But that
Wow.
happens quite often with UFOs, and I have heard it when people see apparitions. They saw different things, which all this kind of leads back to the wonderful Greg Bishop's idea of of co-creation,
Yes.
and that we may not actually create this thing, but it may use our subconscious to display whatever it is a little, you know, a little bit. It may borrow images, and it may not just be borrowing images from us personally, but our sea of archetypes that we all like swim in. So I find that very interesting. Yeah, that's a great story. Thanks for sharing that.
Oh yeah, no problem. There's a Barbara Fisher and 60 Degrees of John Keel.
Yeah.
Her and her mother once both saw something, and she saw a UFO, and her mother saw a large bird.
Right.
And those are not the same thing, but
no.
They both saw something in the sky at the same time.
It's so funny you just mentioned that, because I was just about to mention that. I love Barbara Fisher, and I love her show. I think she's, again, like one of the great minds currently today thinking about this stuff. And her case is wonderful. And not only that, if you read Josh Cutchin read and wrote an amazing three volume with the appendix, Ecology of Souls.
Yes.
And if you've read that book, you'll know that birds represent death just like the UFO does in his theory. And so they're kind of like almost interchangeable, you know, like, it is fascinating. So
I'm still working on it. I mean, it's quite a read.
It's quite a read. It is quite a read, but it's deep and dense.
It's great.
In fact, it's like Josh's books, I tend to like read fast, and then I go back and pull apart chapters, you know, as years go. And that just like a Keel book or a Valet book, you know, like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I would really say he is at the level of those two guys.
Agreed. I think he's such a scholarly writer. His use of comparative analysis is absolutely breathtaking to me. I think it's just beautiful the way he's able to take, you know, and like these are ideas that have been done before. Like I kind of think Josh kind of came onto the scene saying, I read Passport to Magonia. It changed my life. Now I'm going to write three books about fairies. kind of going even more deep on Valet's ideas mm-hmm. and Passport. So I kind of think like those books are like the sequels, the part of the Passport to Magonia franchise in a way.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, you know, mm-hmm. they were really important for me when they came out, and they still are to this day.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you that Mothman Prophecies blew my mind.
Agreed.
The movie's okay, but it's like 5% of what's in the book.
If that, yeah.
Yeah. And when I read that, and I basically picked up the book because it had such a weird title,
mm-hmm.
you know, Mothman Prophecies, what the hell is this? And pow! Wow. And I found the actual Mothman creature, whatever that may be, was not the most interesting part of the book.
No.
By any means,
that
all the weird people, or entities purporting to be people,
right?
That,
well,
you know, people encounter. He encounters that somebody's in his house, you know, in New York. I mean, it's crazy things happen.
Yeah, you're so right.
That woman goes into the library and interacts with these bizarre people that. It makes no sense that they're even there.
Yeah.
And they lead her on all these, I don't know, adventures. That's not really the word. They're manipulating her, but for no purpose that makes any sense, you know?
Yep. Yep. That's a great example to where like the Mothman as like a symbol or icon is almost just like the mothership hanging above Point Pleasant in that era. But the pods that the mothership is sending down to Point Pleasant are really the most interesting part.
Yes,
you know, obviously the Mothman is a harbinger or just kind of like this entity that opened up the gate for other stuff to like waltz on in is interesting. That's an interesting concept in itself, you know. But yeah, the Mothman, when you read the Mothman Prophecies, I mean, like, wow, it's very interesting, of course. Turns out to be the least interesting part about everything that's going on.
Yes, it's everything else that is so off the charts.
I know. And it's a beautiful book.
Yeah. And Woodrow Durenberger's experiences. Oh, and, you know, just what is this? Good Lord.
I know. Yeah. It's even just like sociologically, like the book, I mean, like what was happening, you know, not just in Point Pleasant, but in the other little Ohio towns around there and the other little West Virginia towns around there across the river. Seemed to cause this kind of like sociological hysteria and this cultural hysteria, you know, like,
oh yeah.
And I don't think it was like panic in the streets, but it was this undercurrent of, you know, which obviously you can bring out like hoaxed cases. You know, I feel like mm-hmm. I'm feel that Woody Derenberger, I mean, John Keel did not think Woody Derenberger was a truthful person. You know, yeah. He questioned the whole Intercold thing a lot. But, you know, I do think it's interesting just the, so many of the stories were part of this hysteria, you know, that people felt like they could come out with the weird, this weird stuff that happened to them. Because, like, some of the stories weren't even stuff that was happening then. It's stuff that happened, you know, 10 years before, but people felt like they could come out with these stories now. So it's interesting when one thing happens that's fairly dramatic in a small little microcosm, that it just is the symptom of that is that you get a lot of other stories.
Oh, yeah. And that's, you know, it's weirdly self-generating, you know?
Totally. Totally. It's like a little, you have to spark that engine in an area and then, man, things will happen. And it will not just be one thing, you know?
No, it will take off in all directions.
Right, right, right.
And that was something Keel really, he was the first person that I'm sure other people have said it, but he was the first one I read that really put it together. And that said, I'm paraphrasing, but only slightly, that wherever you live, within a 100-mile radius, somebody's seen an alien. Yep. Somebody's seen a large, hairy creature.
Yep.
You know, somebody's seen a ghost. No matter where you are, that this is a universal human experience.
I think you're right.
You know, it happens, and it seems to have a life of its own. You know, it takes off.
Yes.
Let me see.
You know, it's interesting, Vincent. I just one thing on that is because, like, when I first moved, because I lived in LA for 20 years, and then I moved back in like late 2020, my wife and I did, from LA to Omaha, Nebraska, where I'm originally from, just so my parents are a little older, so I want to be close to them. But I kind of said, like, well, here I am in Nebraska. What's weird here? You know, and I started getting into the history of Nebraska weirdness, and I was definitely finding some things. But then I said to myself, like, oh, I remember what you just said about John Keel. And he said, if you want to research an area, take a smallish microcosm, learn what the culture is like, learn what people believe in, learn what they eat, learn their all, like, where their ancestors are from. And I kind of took that page out of Keel's book, and I've been using specifically Eastern Nebraska as my little research laboratory. And what I have found is that I did not know this before. There is a ton of weird stuff in Eastern Nebraska that we can talk about later. But I just want to jump on that because you said that John Keel thing. I'm like, that is literally where I got the idea.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, if you had to ask, before I became aware of your work and stuff, if you would have asked me what's the least paranormal state in the country, I probably would have said Nebraska.
Yeah, dude, totally. Because if you're going up what you read on the internet or the lack of documentation and books that, you know, Nebraska has, that's what I thought when I moved back. I'm like, oh man, well, Iowa's got a lot of stuff. I'm close to Iowa. I'll do my research there. But I was totally wrong. And the thing is, what I was wrong about again was I kind of had thought that if it wasn't, you know, found on a Google search, then it didn't exist. And again, I was wildly wrong because most of the really good stuff I found is in old newspapers, stories from old researchers, like old like newsletters. I mean, you have to remember, there so much of the stuff just doesn't make it onto the internet.
And that's so true. That's you know, always amazes me that too. You go back a little ways and pre-internet, man, so much. Yeah. There's been no real effort to archive a lot of stuff.
I think you're right. Like the stuff from basically like the early 20th century to like late or, you know, early 90s, a lot of that stuff is not on the internet, man. Like it just isn't. So. Uh-huh.
And that's, if you can, I'm on newspapers.com too.
Me too.
And that's a rich source for a lot of stuff.
I honestly like think it's the most important internet source I have in terms of doing research in Nebraska. Has been that. I cannot recommend it enough. So worth the small subscription fee, you know, so.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Let me see. So, I wanted to ask you, how did you get into this? Were you always interested in this, or was there some event that provoked your interest? Or?
Well, no, there was no, like, dramatic event at all. I'm just, you know, it's interesting. Since I started doing my podcast, I've been on other people's shows and getting asked this question, and I've thought about it a lot, and I think at a very, very young age, I was into this stuff, and like I remember my mom taking me to get. It's really one of my earliest memories. I don't have like a lot of like memories from like 3, or even 4, but I know at 5 years old, my mom took me to get my first library card, and like she and then we got the library card. I watched the Curious George film strip, and then I went off and picked up books, and I came back with like a Billy Meyer picture book of UFOs, which is funny. It's a known hoaxer. I love it, you know. And then I book up a magic trick. And since then, I just voraciously read everything I could get on UFOs, ghosts, spontaneous human combustion, like those Time Life book series. I had them as a kid, and my even my elementary school would order me new books about the paranormal because I would read them all. And I had a nice librarian. She's like, "Well, I'll order you some new ones." And I'm like, "Oh, yay!" But it got so to like the point by the time I was in the sixth grade, about 12 years old, I started going to my first UFO conferences.
Oh, wow.
And it was kind of back in the 80s where your parents would just like drop you off for the day at like a conference full of hundreds of people and with a sack lunch and be like, "All right, see you at 5." You know, it was the 80s. Just kind of like, you
Yes,
know, if you're
yes.
12, you could be out on your own. And I've just, you know, and the thing is I think probably like I kind of thought about like it was Dungeons and Dragons or like, you know, video games, something I gr like gradually grow out of. That never happened. It's only like right now I'm at my peak of my interest in this stuff. It only gets more like intense, to be honest. But that is kind of my origin story. And I think one of the reasons I gravitated to this stuff so much so young is because I grew up in a house with like no religion. We did not go to church. We celebrated the holidays, but just like, you know, culturally. And so there was no prayer in my house. We didn't go to church. And I think naturally young people want kind of spiritualism, or at least I think I did as a kid. And I found it in UFOs and the paranormal. And that was
That
kind
makes a
of
lot of
like,
sense. That
I
really.
was, you know, it was like my version of faith, I suppose, which sounds weird and like
No, it
culty,
doesn't.
but
Well, I don't
you
know how
know,
it sounds to other people. It doesn't sound weird to me
yeah,
at all.
exactly. Yeah.
Your
Yeah.
story parallels my own a lot.
Oh, interesting.
I grew up, I didn't have any big, I mentioned that thing with the cryptid thing, but that I was in my late 40s at that point. I didn't have like a lot of experiences that drew me into this. I was just always into it. I remember watching In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy, and I wanted to be Leonard Nimoy, man. Go places and see what's going on and try to solve the mystery.
I hear
And
you.
then, you know, I was a young adult and Unsolved Mysteries was on. I got stuck on
Me
that, you
too.
know.
Me too.
And then I came upon a British magazine called 14 Times.
Oh, yeah.
And that was mind blowing. And I still read that, you know, practically every month. And that put together things in a way I'd never heard before. And they're really good. And they're not believers. They're not debunkers. They're 14s. And that's, I said, that's what I am.
They're reporting the stories. And like,
Yes.
you know, I think that the thing is that I think when, you know, like, you know, I remember I was doing a lecture on the Nebraska stuff, and in some of my case examples I use, they're super weird cases. And someone said, like, "Do you believe all these stories in these cases?" I go, "No, I don't, but I don't disbelieve them either. The stories are the thing that's important to me."
Yes,
And through
that's.
the stories, we can find commonalities in the stories and start to like say, like, "Well, I don't know, there might be something to this." You know what I'm saying? So like to say like I am only interested in stories that are true. Well, which ones are? I don't know. I mean, like, you know,
Exactly.
like
You can't, unless somebody is making money at it by, you know, generating a particular story, I have no reason to doubt them automatically. You often people don't want to come forward, don't want to use their real name, don't want the attention, you know. And
Absolutely.
you know, why would you make that up if you don't want any attention? You're not trying to commercialize it, but this weird thing happened to you, you know. I'm thinking of, I don't know if I'm going to get the guy's name right. Richard Feynman, he was a very conventional physicist. I mean, you know, I say conventional, he was like a really brilliant physicist. And he said that he was camping one point and a glowing raccoon came up and talked to him. Now, he has no motive to say that if it didn't happen. It's not gonna, it's not gonna sound good when you're back at the
Nope.
university.
It's not great for your professional life.
Yes, but he said, yeah, that happened to me.
Yeah.
I can't prove it.
Yep.
I have
Yep.
no photography or anything, but
Exactly.
it did happen,
Yeah,
and
exactly.
things like that happen to people.
And that's the thing. It's like, well, I say nothing has happened to me. I've had like minor things where I'm like, that's a little weird, but I always like somehow like convince myself that it's something mundane. But even if I had like a dramatic experience, unless someone was with me, if someone was by myself, I'd almost probably doubt it. I think like, oh, I had like a misfiring of brain synapses and went crazy for 5 seconds or something, you know, like
Well, that's
I would find a way to probably like, you know, convince myself that it didn't really happen.
how Carl Sagan explained away a couple of paranormal incidents that he had. That he said there's billions of neurons and some of mine just must have gone wrong.
Yeah.
That's why I heard the voice of my dead parent.
Yeah.
And well, maybe that's why, or maybe you heard the
Maybe.
voice of your dead parent,
Or maybe you did. Yeah, exactly. And it might not have actually been your dead parent, but something mimicking your dead parents. It was borrowing from your subconscious.
Yes.
It gets
And
weird,
that's,
man. It gets weird,
oh,
doesn't it?
very much so. Did you notice, and there's no right or wrong answer, I'm just asking, when you started doing a podcast that focused, on the paranormal, did anything change in your life?
No. And you know, I was kind of looking out for that because I know the deeper, you know, a lot of people talk about the deeper they go into this stuff, the more synchronicities happen. Although I will say, like, I feel like I have quite a few synchronicities and I'm always looking into this stuff. So I haven't, I feel like by doing the podcast, maybe I've added a handful of, you know, a couple extra hours into my paranormal
You're
world, but
so
like,
into it already that
I'm, yeah, man,
it's as
there's
weird
not
as it's gonna
day.
get.
Yeah, it's like every night, you know, once my, you know, I kind of stay up late. My wife goes to bed early. And so when she goes to bed, like at 9 until what, but for the last 4 hours of my day, I'm just going deep into this.
I
So
got it.
that's just kind of, and I haven't for so long that I think it's just like, if I stepped away from it, that might be a liminal state for me. And I wonder if then things would happen, you
That's very
know?
interesting and maybe the
Yeah.
case. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can tell you when I fumbled around trying to start this podcast, I didn't have any full-on intense experiences, but I did have a very strange thing that suddenly there were all these black SUVs in my neighborhood. And they look exactly like what federal agents use as an unmarked car.
Right.
And there just seemed to be an awful lot of them. And I
Weird.
started to get uneasy, like, is there
Yeah.
an investigation going on? Am I
Right.
under investigation? I'm
Yeah.
not doing anything.
Yeah.
And then there would be this black SUV that would park across the street from my house. And that's like a two-lane each way divided highway. So it's not right there. And you can
Right.
barely get a good look at it. But it was a black SUV and it would shine its headlights in my kitchen window.
Ooh.
And it would sit there for like an hour. And at one point, I walked up to the kitchen window and looked at it. And I did that thing. I didn't have a gun.
Right.
But I made my,
Yeah.
finger gesture of
Sure.
a gun
Yeah.
and mimicked like I was shooting.
Right.
And it took off instantly. And that blew my mind. Because I'm like, that's not a coincidence. Somebody was watching me. Who the hell is watching me
That
in my
is
kitchen
deeply
window?
unsettling.
Yes, it was. It did not follow me when we moved later. So that's so far so good.
Okay,
But
good, good, good.
it was a weird, like the toe in the water of Men in Black experience.
Yeah.
Not that, but towards that.
Yeah,
And
that, I mean, that's
it's just
odd.
very strange.
And you couldn't tell if they had light, did you see the license plates? Like, were they normal or?
No, I could never get a good,
Yeah, it
I
was
couldn't
dark
even,
out.
I tried to replicate where would you have to park to be able to see into my kitchen.
Yeah.
And I could never get it right. I could
Yeah.
never find the spot where they would be parked, even though
Weird.
it's a courtyard, it's not a big area. There's not too many
Right.
options. It was genuinely strange. And
Creepsville.
Yeah. It freaked me out. And I was like,
yeah.
Am I under investigation for something?
Yeah. You know? Should I not be talking about ghosts? Oh my God. Exactly, you know?
Like, it cannot be the podcast.
No.
No way.
Right. Yeah.
At that point, I have like four listeners.
You know? Yeah. But still, the timing, you're like, oh God.
And it's like that thing in the field. I've racked my brain for any mundane explanation, yeah. You know? And I've got nothing, you know. It's the same type of thing.
Yep.
And it reminded me of something that Aaron Gullius discussed happening when he went to the TNT area, where the Mothman prophecy stuff took place.
Uh-huh.
And a black Cadillac passed him and then disappeared. And he's like, you know, I can't prove that was anything other than somebody driving an old car. But, God, it's very unusual.
And it was like an old 50s Cadillac, like the back in the Mothman? It was not a new?
Yes. It wasn't a brand new one. It was
my God.
It was a big old-fashioned Cadillac.
Now, that would make my heart stop.
Yeah, and it was black. And he said it went around the corner. I went around the corner. It was gone. But there's no place for it to have gone.
That is amazing. I have not heard that story. Did that happen recently to him?
I think about a year ago on his podcast. Holy and he's shit. A very, you know, he's not wild-eyed.
No, any of this stuff. He's grounded. He's way more grounded than I am.
Yes, you know, and he's, you know, pretty open that most of the people telling these stories are not telling the truth.
Yes.
Don't take them too seriously.
Yeah.
And then this happened to him.
Yeah. Yeah. Because his focus seems to be more personality based than phenomenon based, you know, like,
yes.
Which is wonderful. I love his show.
Oh, I love it great. Too. Yeah.
Because the personalities are extremely fun and hilarious.
Yes, they are.
Oh, man. And it's all part of it. You know, it's like all these tricksters get involved in this stuff.
And even somebody who's undoubtedly just lying, like Reinhold Schmidt.
Oh, yeah.
Still is interesting, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
interesting story.
Well, I'm deeply fascinated with Reinhold Schmidt, in fact, because he's a Nebraska case.
Oh, yes.
In Kearney, right. Nebraska. And I actually have just talked to a historian who, it's not their work, but a couple of historians previous to her who had a lot of stuff about Reinhold Schmidt, because I guess they were fascinated with the case and had some interviews with him. But this person kind of deduced that, like, he was a con man, but thinks what happened to him is genuine.
Wow.
You know,
which
like,
is kind of, if you're already known, you know, crying wolf too much, that doesn't mean the real wolf isn't going to show up.
You know? Well, it's kind of, you know, it goes back to like what Valet says. He's like, you know, one of the social aspects or symptoms of the UFO phenomenon is that it's so absurd and so ridiculous, and it's a way to repel science. Because if you talk about some of the high strange cases that he does, where like, you know, or like a Kiel case where a rocket ship is in the middle of the road, and then, you know, like three tiny little tin can aliens that look like beer cans with arms and legs get off, and then you tell that to a scientist at Northwestern, they're going to say, get lost, crazy person. But if you make it sound too scientific and like almost mundane and boring, then maybe science will pay attention to it, and maybe the phenomenon does not want that. That's kind of what Valet, I mean, he straight up says that in, I believe it's in Dimensions, but I find that fascinating, where there's a self-negating aspect to the stuff.
Absolutely.
To make it not be taken seriously.
That's when they bring out the pancakes. You know?
Exactly. That's exactly, you know, exactly, man. It's like, that case maybe would have been taken seriously by, you know, UFO organizations. I mean, Hynek did go investigate, so I think it was sort of taken seriously. Mm-hmm. But the pancake thing probably made a lot of, like, scientists, of like, the story was really good. There was some interesting stuff until the pancakes.
and that's so – it is. It's self-negating.
Yeah.
There's always that wild card thing thrown in there.
Absolutely.
So that people won't take it too seriously.
Totally.
It won't – it'll never be mainstream. No. I don't know how it would be mainstream. You know what I mean?
I mean, although the way the world is getting more absurd and surreal and comical and insane, maybe it will.
and that's true, too. That is true, too.
Yeah.
There's a real, it seems to me, and it seems to a lot of people, that there's kind of a breakdown in consensus reality going on.
Yeah, there seems to be.
This was very out there when we were young guys, yeah, young kids getting into it. And now it's being reported on the news, you know, and nobody's laughing about it. You know?
It is. And what I'm actually, you know, it kind of goes back to what we were just talking about. It's funny to me because I find the modern, like 21st century ufology to be the most boring version of the last 100 years, because it's way less about the phenomenon and more about political machinations. And what do you know about the, you know, the alphabet agencies and what's a Doppler, what's a skiff and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I don't give a shit.
Yes.
I don't find it compelling. I find it like, and we're even learning now. We're like, you know, now like Congress is finding out like, actually, we're not able to find anything out. Like, yes. they're basically these defense companies saying like, guess what? No. How about that? We're not going to open up our books. And then Congress is like, well, we tried. And so, I mean, all this stuff we're learning. And I'm not trying to be cynical, but like, you know, we have been here before, you know, in the early 1950s, Ruppelt was, you know, doing the same thing, having these hearings publicly. There was even on the news back then. Then, you know, I mean, but there's been so many iterations of, oh, they have crashed saucers, crashed bodies. If we could only break through the gates of Area 51, we'd know the secrets of the world. These are narratives we've been hearing for 70 plus years. Why would it be different now? We will never be told. And like you said, the consensus reality thing, even if we're told, Biden gets up on the podium and says, we have got biological alien bodies. We have crashed flying saucers. Hey, we also have crashed triangles and Tic Tacs. Who's going to believe it? How many people? I bet 50, less than 50, half the country, maybe 50%. Yeah.
I'm saying 50% will immediately not believe them just because
100%. Yes. So I mean, like, look, we can't even agree that the earth isn't flat. We can't even agree that the sky is blue anymore. Because this reality is a dead concept. And I sort of think a lot of that has to do with how media and entertainment has been so fractured.
Yes.
You know, it's like, you know, there's no like water cooler talk. You don't go up like, you know, at work and say like, hey, did you catch Sopranos last night or Seinfeld or whatever? No, there was 500 shows to watch. There's YouTube, TikTok, social media. So everyone is just, we're being fractured in every aspect of our life. And I think the media fracturization, if that's a word, it isn't, but it is like infecting the paranormal and UFOs too. Like it's,
oh, absolutely.
It's interesting to see. It is, you know, but.
You make a great point. We're roughly the same age.
Yeah.
And when you and I were growing up, there was three channels.
Yeah.
There's the three networks and PBS. That's what there was. Mm-hmm. That's what TV was.
Yeah.
The phone was a rotary dial bolted to the wall object.
Yeah.
You didn't have caller ID on.
Exactly.
You had to answer every time it rang.
Yeah.
Now, my God, I couldn't watch everything that's available to watch because they'd be making new things while I'm watching the old things.
Yeah.
And everybody has nigh unlimited communications abilities.
Yep.
You're in Nebraska right now, right?
Uh-huh. I am Omaha.
Okay. And I am in the city of Milwaukee. And
wonderful.
We couldn't have done this as recently, you know, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It would have been, unless we were really techies, it would be been very difficult.
And even 20 years ago, it wouldn't have worked that well.
No. First, we get the rotary.
It would have been
dial-up internet and get going.
Yeah.
And we'll be lucky if we could actually talk in real time at all.
I know.
It's mostly, it'd be like bulletin boards and stuff.
Yeah.
And that has changed the world we live in drastically.
It sure has. It sure has. You know? Yeah, I mean, there's good sides to it and there's bad sides to it. And I think, you know, the bad, I don't know. I mean, like a lot of it makes me nervous just because I feel like the sense of community is like really been hurt bad by a lot of this stuff. And like, I feel like people need people. I do think that, you know, and I think people need commonalities to be able to get along with other people. You have to have things to talk about, discuss and like hope about and work together for. But if we don't have the same things we're working together to achieve, Because we have a lot of problems to fix here.
Yes, and you can get in a situation where everybody's in their own little niche, and there's no broader society. There's just a million little ones.
Yep.
And that's not for the best, you know?
I don't think so either, but, you know, whatever. Hopefully they'll figure it out.
And not the flip side of that is, if you use social media right, you end up in Nashville.
I know, right? So there is wonderful things. Yeah, I mean, like
all over the country there, gathered in real life to talk about the stuff we like, you know?
You said it, man, because like I say this like ad nauseum, but like I am so grateful to have like a community of like-minded seekers into the weird, you know, and that is all internet based, you know, and like meeting, you know, having a guy like you, I could call up and ask questions about Wisconsin when I'm rolling through, or even go see stuff, or if you're in Omaha, you know, I'm like, dude, let's meet out here, I'll show you some stuff for a day. But like, you know, it's like I met you through the internet, I heard you on a podcast, and then I, you know, could ask you questions. So like there is so much good stuff about this, about this connection we've all have via the internet. Yes.
And if it's used properly, it can really be a force for good.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's kind of like fire, you know?
Yeah, it sure is.
You cook dinner, you can burn the house down. You
know? Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's probably like everything in life where there is good and there's bad and there's in-betweens, you know, like,
You've been doing a lot of research in Nebraska.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you mind sharing a couple of the weirder things you found?
Sure. Yeah. Well, okay. So, one of the things I did when I moved back to Nebraska is, you know, like there are some quasi famous cases, the Herbert Shermer case, a police officer in 1967, who was taken aboard a UFO. That was always kind of, I want to say probably our most famous modern UFO sighting. And then we have an airship case in 1897, where 500 people in downtown Omaha saw a flying airship hovering above downtown, which I think is a very famous deal. And the Historical Society has recognized it and has a big thing written about it. And so we have this kind of like history that you can find on the internet.
But when I moved, era fascinates me.
Me too. In Nebraska, really, I mean, I don't know if they had the most, but if it was either Nebraska or like Illinois and Iowa, it was that, I mean, around those regions in the Midwest, it was all over, happening multiple times a day. Like, I mean, it really got to a fever pitch.
And it was for so a couple close years to the technology that was going to be real technology.
Yeah.
But it's always kind of off, you know?
Yeah, it was. And in some of the stories, speaking of another Wisconsin person, Zelia Edgar, I think she is awesome. She is so awesome. She has done. She's one of the great researchers, I think, living right now. I truly, truly love her work. She did a 3-part series on her YouTube channel about the airship case. And it's the most exhaustive look into it. But what she noticed is how odd the occupants acted. They act like men in black. Well, they'll say, like, you know, I think there's a case in Nebraska where they get off, like they come down off a rope off the ship hovering in the air, mind you. And they come down with a pail and go, may we have a pail of water, you know? And like oftentimes they were like giving people $10 to run errands in town for them. There's always like the getting of water or food or this and that. That's, and kind of goes back to the fairy lore. But some of the odd non sequiturs sound so much like Men in Black, where one case is like, do you know what time it is in Cuba? Or no, do you know what time it is here? And they'll be like 2 o'clock, and they'll say, well, it's 2 o'clock. It's like, no, it's not. It's 3. We have to be in Cuba to fight the war. See you tomorrow. And then they'll get off on the ship and they'll zoom off. But the stuff they said was not quite, it was like almost like how humans talk, like the Men in Black, but not quite. There's something off. Another wonderful thing she pointed out. Oh gosh, I'm totally getting off of the number. You asked me.
No, it's fine.
Sorry.
It's like somebody trying to mimic the way humans talk.
It is.
Getting it.
You know? It is. I'm so excited about that idea because I think the idea of the Men in Black, if you like kind of go back in paranormal history, they've kind of always been there, just in different manifestations. So sorry to get off on that tangent.
No.
Anyway, about so when I came back to Nebraska, there's a researcher, probably the most famous and best collector of Nebraska folklore, legends, paranormal, UFO stuff, is Ray Boucher. And Ray Boucher sort of became a well-known figure when Nick Redfern wrote that book, Final Events, because Ray Boucher is sort of the protagonist about it. And it's a really great book. But Ray also was kind of, I guess, made his bones and got known for, he was the guy who was originally writing the Freedom of Information requests about Rendlesham back in the early 80s.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, so he's been in Nebraska, and he had a Fortean Society here in the 80s and 90s. And I just always thought that was so cool because, like, him, this guy named Dale Bacon, Scott Colburn, literally had this society in Lincoln, Nebraska, where cops would say, hey, so a lady said a Bigfoot's picking apples off her tree. You guys want to go check it out? Or a UFO supposedly landed in this farmer's backyard. So the cops would, they would get calls from the police and the local military, and they would just call these guys, like, do you guys, look, we can't go look at all these things. If you guys want to go check it out, you can. So they would do it. And it's, the stories they collected were amazing. So I kind of reached out to Ray when I moved back here and said, Ray, you know, like, I'm one to look at Nebraska weird stuff, maybe write a book, and just kind of like, you know, no one's really doing it, and I kind of want to do it. And so he gave me some great advice. He's like, look, Steve, there's this county in Nebraska called Odo County, and there's a ghost town called Minersville there. A lot of weird stuff happened there in the late 1900s, all the way up to the 1960s, where a bunch of weird stuff was happening. And I'm like, huh. So he started sending me these clippings and articles, and some, I mean, like, look, going back to the late 1900s, people were seeing black cats, big long 9 foot long panthers,
wow,
going around schoolhouses. Like, you know, there's articles in the newspaper, so much so that the mayor at the time hired men with torches and shotguns to go hunt and kill this black cat, this giant black cat that was killing livestock. Also happens to be in that era, people were seeing a wild man creature covered in fur. And they also were seeing lights go over the Missouri River. So he started, and this is all.
We're talking like the 1890s?
This is like the 1890s all the way up to the 60s.
Wow.
In the 60s, a lot of stuff happened. Ufologically, like, you know, structure craft, lights over the Missouri River again, Bigfoot type creatures being seen, two reports of two different teenagers getting like harmed by this thing. Ooh. One kid was thrown in a ditch and like scratched up, you know, but like, quite a lot of stuff. And he was like, Ray was like 15 at the time, and he was pen pals with John Keel. And John Keel,
that's where I've heard his name before. That's where,
yeah, okay. Yeah, Ray was pretty tight with John Keel. And Keel, it was funny because this was like right when he was just starting to go to Point Pleasant. It was like 66 67, and John said to Ray, he's like, look, I've come up with this kind of new term for what's happening. It's called a window area, and I think you have one. You know, and one of the cases that I love so much, that is a case I've tried to publicize, I think it's just so wonderful, but in 1957, this man named Mr. Hanks, it's a pseudonym, he didn't want his name out there, was driving his family back into Falls City, Nebraska, which is a small little town right in that eastern Nebraska hub where the weird stuff happens. And he was driving his, you know, they were getting groceries, and the family went inside to grab the groceries, and he was going to repark the car in the street. And he sees this like very large, like bird up in the sky. And he's like, huh, that's odd. That is a very large bird. That's very peculiar. So he's kind of like, he's, you know, sitting in his car, and then he gets out of his car to like get a better look at it, and it starts like dropping and getting closer. And it's really wobbling a lot. And he's like, whatever this thing is that is, looks too big to be a bird, is having some big problems, like flying. And he, you know, all of a sudden gets out of his car and he is paralyzed. And then he looks and he sees that this thing is like a 9 foot tall, leathery, tan, leathery skinned, demon looking thing with piercing blue eyes. And it's wearing a shoulder harness for wings. The wings are like not organic, they're like mechanical wings. And then on his chest has like a crude computer and dials and knobs that's twisting. And in his mind, it's like trying to course correct the failing flight that this creature's having. So it gets wobbly, gets close to the ground, and finally it turns a knob, fixes itself, and flies off. He becomes unparalyzed. But the after effects for this poor man were awful. Like, he was a lifelong insomniac. He said he actually took another job so he could avoid sleep.
Wow.
And he, when he told the story, he was an older man, said, it really kind of ruined my life.
Wow. That is incredible.
And
it's like, what even is that?
What even is that?
Yeah. You know, is this a human being wearing a contraption?
Yeah.
Because no one's ever patented anything like that.
No. And it looked like demonic. You know, he said it was like no hair. It was like all wrinkled and leathery with like blue eyes. Like, ooh, that's terrifying.
And it'd be somehow less weird if the wings were natural.
Right.
Or part of its body.
I agree.
Controlled with dials that.
Right. When I first heard that it was like this demon was using technology, I'm like, I don't think I've ever heard that, because it was like kind of horrifying. It was just horrifying.
Yeah.
But I love it at the same time. You know,
those are the ones that really pique my interest. Yes.
Me too. Me too. The weirder, the better.
Yes. And that don't really fit with, you know, the kind of well-known paranormal activity.
Yep,
they're
exactly.
Kind of one-offs, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what the hell is that?
It's so bizarre. But it also just kind of goes along with this region, though. This region is truly odd. All the way from the tippy top of northeast Nebraska all the way to the very bottom of southeast Nebraska. Wow. Now, currently, what's happening, a lot of the action is happening on the Omaha Indian Reservation and the Winnebago Reservation. And they, like, allegedly, supposedly, have so many Bigfoot interactions that it is not, like, an uncommon thing. And they say it's been happening for a long time, quite a long time. And the Omaha tribe is a very, like, pretty, like, you know, spiritual. They have a lot of, like, really interesting beliefs. And I've got to know this guy named Barry Webster, who has this kind of Bigfoot research team on the reservation. He's a member of the tribe, like one of the elders. And what he was telling me is that they see like Bigfoot coming out of like a purple swirling mist. They have like little stick figure alien creatures. I mean, like orbs of light going everywhere. It was kind of funny because I actually got in touch with someone who went out on an expedition with these two guys. And I was like, well, how was it? You know, was it, you know, did you see anything or whatever? And they were like, well, we didn't see Bigfoot. And I was like, oh, that's, you know, it's too bad, but you know, not uncommon. And they're like, but, well, we did see these, like, orbs of light swirling all over the place and, like, appearing and disappearing. But they were, like, bummed out about that. I was like, dude, you just saw orbs of light going through a forest all night? Like, I mean, that's pretty big.
Yes. That is its own thing. And
that's its own thing.
Wow.
So, yeah, so currently that's where a lot of the action is happening. And there have been a handful of flying wing humanoid cases out there. You know, wow. UFOs, just kind of, like, all the above.
If you could go back. Who was the cop that got abducted? Or
yeah, so I can paraphrase this case kind of. So Herbert Shermer, they did the first time I ever heard about it was on Unsolved Mysteries. Actually,
okay.
I think it was like in an early season. But so Herbert Shermer was a police officer. He was like he was a war hero. He was a young man who was early 20s, and he was a police officer in Ashland, Nebraska, which is about 22 miles away from where I grew up in Omaha. Anyways, he was doing his like night rounds, like going to like, I guess like the last thing he did was go check a country, you know, on the country road, check a filling station. And, you know, everything looked good and he was on his way back. And then when he was driving back on this, on the junction of, mind you, they renamed the road, but it used to be called the junction of 66 and 6. So 666, which I always thought, like, that's interesting too. A little Twilight language there.
Yes, indeed.
But, he sees in this kind of like ditch area what he thought was an overturned semi. And he's like, oh my God, I better go check that out. So he kind of gets closer. And what he sees is like this kind of up, like a parallel looking football shaped craft with like rocket flames coming out the bottom. Huh. And he's like, what? And then he see, you know, then he like, you know, watches it, drives back to the station, which is just like a mile away, realizes he's missing, like, I can't remember the exact amount, 45 minutes or an hour of time. And he's really traumatized. He tells everyone at the police station what he just saw. And I think they went back out there, checked it out. It was gone. Well, he later starts remembering some of the stuff, and he was taken aboard the craft, had a real dramatic abduction experience, you know, like they weren't like mean, but they were like, you know, it was kind of like, almost like a little bit contact-y, you know, esque, where they were talking about, you know, treat the planet better, that kind of stuff, that sort of narrative. But he was so forthright with it. Kyle just like told the public, the Condon committee flew him to Colorado to testify. I think Jalen Hynek got involved a little bit. Leonard Stringfield did. Even the Offutt Air Force Base, which at the time was one of like kind of like nuclear strongholds of the country. So it's a very major strategic, air command base. They came out, supposedly, I don't know that for a fact, but supposedly they did. Anyways, the aftermath was really interesting too, because the whole town turned on him. The local church said he was communicating with demons from hell. This man is bad. They hung an effigy of him where kids would shoot it with 22 rifles. Wow. Supposedly, here's one story I actually haven't been able to verify. Supposedly they blew up his civilian car with dynamite. But after a couple months of this, he's like, it is dangerous for me to be here. This whole town wants to now kill me because I said what I thought. He was like a really loved cop in this town. Mm-hmm. It's a small little town. Mm-hmm. He ended up changing his name, leaving Nebraska and never coming back.
Wow.
And he got real the interesting thing was and that's kind of the story, what we knew till now. But 2 years ago in Ashland, they were having Ashland Days every summer. It's kind of like, a week where it's like a, small town kind of carnival or like state fair type situation. But the theme this year was UFOs and celebrating Herbert Schirmer's case, which I'm like, well, that's kind of ironic considering how you guys treated
them. Oh, yes.
But anyways, Herbert's two brothers who don't live in Nebraska flew them in to give like a lecture about the Herbert Schirmer case. And because it was COVID probably, but only like 7 people showed up, which I was like, oh man, this is like kind of huge, like his brothers are there.
Yeah.
But what was able to happen, because no one showed up, I ended up talking to these guys for like 90 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And what they told me, it was fascinating. I got to hear that, they're like, oh, it ruined his life. He became like wildly religious after that. He would go to church like 5 days a week, change his name, move to Georgia. But what they also said, and I was like, well, did you guys have any experiences before that? He's like, oh yeah. He's like, when we were little, one of the brothers wasn't born yet, but me, Herbert, and my dad and my mom were driving in White Sands, New Mexico, and saw a silver saucer landed in the desert.
Wow.
And all the kids wanted to go up to it, and the dad was like so freaked out, he just kept on driving straight ahead. But I was like, nobody knew that. Like, I had never heard that in all the things I've read. And so, I'm not trying to say, I uncovered this little piece. But, to me, that is a very important piece of the Herbert Schirmer story, that he's a repeat experiencer. That he had this sighting as a kid. Because I never knew that. And my guess is other authors probably left that out to make him seem more credible. Because on that day, if you were a repeat experiencer, they threw you to the side.
I remember thinking that very same thing, that if this person's seeing an awful lot of things, maybe they're just prone to hallucinations.
Yeah.
Maybe they're, a flake.
Yeah.
And my views have really evolved and
Me too.
Matured on that.
Me too.
It's often a lifelong process.
I'm with you because kind of the programming we had growing up was like, look, if someone sees a UFO once, okay, they see it twice, they're a lunatic. That was kind of what the books told me as a kid. And then when you read like more, I guess, complex, maybe more intellectual books about such as like a valet book or a Keel book, you find that is the exact opposite.
Yes.
Where I almost think it's rare for someone to experience one thing. I actually I've talked to luckily been able to talk with quite a few witnesses in Nebraska. And when the first thing I asked them after they tell me their experience, I go, did you have anything afterwards? Or did you have anything before? How did it change your worldview? And I'm always getting stuff. They always have something that happened, even if it's very minor.
Mm-hmm.
But
it makes a lot of sense. That seems to be how it works.
Yeah. I just talked to a woman who said well, I had this UFO experience in 1989. And the only thing that happened is a day later when I went to sleep, I knew my dad was I was going to wake up. My dad was going to be dead, even though he's perfectly healthy. She's like, I had this flash in my brain of getting a phone call saying your father passed away. Lo and behold, she gets a call at 4 in the morning saying her father had passed away.
Wow.
2 days after she had a UFO sighting. So, that's the kind of stuff. And that's also the kind of stuff that makes you think UFOs. I mean, maybe some of it represents biological aliens from another rock, but there's too much paranormal stuff along with it. So it seems like I just have a hard time believing it. It's that answer doesn't really hold much water for me anymore.
No, me neither. I don't have an answer, but I have that's not it.
I have ideas that I change every day, but yeah.
I'm just thinking with Shermer,
Yeah.
the conviction that you have to have to go, you're a police officer and you're going to go into the station and tell all your colleagues that you just interacted with an alien spaceship. I mean, you having been in that field, you don't really want the ridicule that you're going to get, which is
Hell
going to
no.
be a lot, you know?
Also, like part of that job, I think, is like they want you to have a very cogent, like grounded mind. And if you're
Yes.
talking that, if you tell, like, as a police officer who's hired to protect and serve, ideally, you probably aren't trying to hire people who see UFOs. You know what I'm saying? So, like,
Yes. It and especially in that era, it really called your judgment into question.
Of course, of
And
course.
I'm thinking of a similar case. This didn't involve anybody going into the craft, but at least three cops, I think from at least two different jurisdictions, chased a UFO for like 100 miles, some ridiculously long distance, and wrote reports about it and everything. And, you're putting your name on saying this thing happened. And I was on duty and I saw this thing in the sky. And it also, at least one of them, it really ruined his life, you
Yeah,
know.
well, I mean, there is, especially where you're in your region, I can think of two cop stories. Is the Valensole? Is that the name of his name? I can't, it begins with a V. Anyways, the police officer in Minnesota that had this dramatic case, and it actually like supposedly hit his craft and left these markings,
Oh,
or the
wow.
craft hit his car,
Car?
left markings, and they still have the car. It's in a Minnesota town. Like they open it up and let for like a weekend, let people see it when they celebrate this like little UFO parade. And then there's another one in Wisconsin. In one of the towns where they claim to be the UFO capital, there's three towns in Wisconsin that claim to be the UFO capital of Wisconsin.
Yes,
And in
yes.
one of the towns, a police officer had saw this like craft for like 5 minutes hovering above the rock quarry.
Wow.
So, I mean, the police officers and UFOs and other weird stuff. Oh my God, there is a lot of stories actually, more than you
Yes,
would think.
there is. And some of it, I would say, is just because who's out driving around in the middle of
Of course.
the
Yeah,
night? But
absolutely.
we had a case in Wisconsin where the cop said he was shot with a ray
Oh yeah.
by a UFO, and he died of cancer not that long thereafter.
Really? What's that
Yes.
case?
Now I brought it up and I'm
Yeah,
completely
no.
blanking, but
Please send it to me. Send it to me later, 'cause
I certainly
I'm very
will.
interested in that.
Yeah, it was absolutely fascinating.
Oh.
And it just seemed, wow, that's
Yeah.
not an ordinary experience.
I
Even with
know.
highly unusual
Right?
circumstances,
But you hear about
that's
it.
even
It's,
weirder,
yeah, if you read about what's going on in Colares and in Brazil back in the 60s and 70s, though, there was a lot of like people who were hurt by these
Yes,
chupas or
yes.
these black box UFOs people were saying. So,
Which are, again, just a bizarre kind of
oh,
craft.
yeah.
It's like it's like a refrigerator
A
size.
flying refrigerator.
Yeah.
Yep.
How the hell can that fly?
I
You
know.
know?
I know.
And like Shermer's craft, why would you have
Yeah.
rocket
Rocket. Yeah.
flames? I mean, that's not a real technology.
Yeah, and it reminds me of speaking of another cop with rockets and UFOs, the Socorro case, Lonnie Zamora. That UFO took off like a rocket too. And remember, it left like burn marks in the ground and stuff like that. Had like three like little like pegs that went out, the little
Yes,
kickstands.
these bizarre technologies that
Oh,
couldn't
it's
possibly
great.
work,
I don't understand it. I love it.
couldn't possibly be
No.
things. Even the
No.
moon would be no. What
But
the
yeah, it seemed like you said earlier, it was like almost trying to mimic where we are in 20 years. You know, like not
yes.
too shocking, but
And then there's the ones that are, antiquated. That that technology wouldn't work either,
Yep, it's so funny.
I'm thinking of the director, the guy who made Pan's Labyrinth, Benicio del
Oh,
Toro.
no, that it's, oh God, This is
he's a really famous director.
Yeah, he's very famous. Now I can't remember because I'm stupid. But
no, I'll just say it's that guy.
Yeah,
he said he had one UFO sighting in his life, and he was. Have you heard of this?
Was it like a junky UFO?
Yes, it was just.
Yeah,
it was crap. It's like
yeah.
I could do so much better with special effects and, you know, make something really impressive. And this is just this jalopy of a
yep.
thing that's got Christmas tree lights or something on
right.
it. It just, you know, it's like, why is it showing me this?
Those tend to be my favorite. My favorite, like, you know, if I have to get really granular about UFOs, I love old junky ones. Like, kind of like the, I'm actually like, I don't do not believe Billy Meier, but I love his photography. I think as an artist, he's very good.
Oh, like, yes.
Those are beautiful over like the Swiss sunset, like in this beautiful like prairies. I mean, like right at magic hour where the sun's glistening off the crowd. I mean, it looks gorgeous, and they're nice and junky and not too intimidating. It's like, oh, I can wrap my mind around that kind of a saucer. But I also love in the 80s there was like almost like these double decker bus looking UFOs, and they'd have like two rows of lights, and they looked like double decker buses, and I love those too.
I'm always fascinated with the weird archaic type of UFO that
Yeah.
has like portholes,
Me too.
You know, and it looks like totally a real object that would be
Yep.
made in like a factory in Detroit in
I know.
The 50s. And it's like, how does this, how, where, what is this thing? Because it's certainly not an alien spacecraft from another
right?
planet.
And
That,
like,
they
and
wouldn't look like that.
I totally agree. And I mean, to even think about this, it's like, look, we're like, when we started exploring Mars like 20 years ago, what did we do? It's not like we sent humans up there. We sent like little like rovers. So what, I mean, like, why would they be like, how many soil samples do these entities need? Okay. You know, like how many, like, you know, like pieces of samples of DNA do they need from abductees? All this stuff is performance to me.
Yes.
It does feel like with UFOs, cryptids, ghosts, and anything we see visually, I tend to look, and this is not my idea. This is probably a amalgamation of valet and a bunch of other people, but like, to me, it seems like there's somebody in a director's chair up in the astral, somewhere in the astral plane, behind a monitor directing little short films to show people. And they're going to be different. They're going to be weird. And it's like a David Lynch movie where the ending is completely unclear. I'll show you the first act, the second act, and then the third act is going to be psychedelic and insane. You know what I'm saying?
And oh, I, absolutely. That's what seems to happen. That,
yeah.
This is a performance for you.
Yeah.
And we're going to tell you something.
Yeah.
What our real message is.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem to make any sense at all.
Yeah. And I you know, like, I even think I've kind of thrown away the whole notion of like, well, there's good aliens and there's bad aliens. You know, some are love and light, some are like demonic and dark. I can't really see that it's benevolent or malevolent. I think it just is. I actually almost like kind of keel think it doesn't care about us and what we want and even our well-being. It just is there. I don't know if there's like a grand point to it that we all kind of want to try to somehow decipher. Because so far, I can't see one other than just to completely confound us and mess with us a little bit. And maybe it helps in the evolutionary process. And, you know, because whether we like it or not, like the notion of UFOs has completely affected society. Totally.
Oh, yes.
It's affected our belief system. We may be witnessing a new religion in the making, you know, like,
yes,
so it's whether it's real or not, it's real because it's affected us, you know.
Exactly. You can't argue that the effects aren't real.
The effects are very real. Yeah.
And it just seems there's one thing I wanted to mention. We tend, including myself, tend to assume that what the phenomena, what the other, what the various entities, we assume that they're doing it intentionally.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know that that's necessarily the case.
Right.
That Bigfoot may be having a hell of an experience when he sees us.
Yeah.
He's walking through his universe and suddenly, oh crap, who are these things?
I saw those things again. Oh, yeah, you do. Whatever, Harry. Yeah.
Whatever happened to my forest?
Exactly, man.
And suddenly he's the stranger in the stranger.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, the idea, and again, I'm so sorry for like name-dropping Valet all over the place. I obviously am very influenced by his work. But, you know, he talks about it's like when you went, and I think you can say this for about all really profound paranormal experiences, but like with UFOs, he kind of says that he's like, it's as if for a brief moment you were existing in two different worlds. And that kind of goes back to Jenny Randall's, like, you know, kind of Oz effect thing, where like it does almost seem like for a brief moment when you have these experiences, and granted, I have never had one, this is just like, so I'm coming at it, you know, not from an experiencer point of view, but it does seem like, from what I can hear described in the patterns and the motifs that keep on showing up, that for a little while, somebody is in a bubble of non-reality where they're there, where they're there on Earth, but they're experiencing two worlds at once. And I really like that as a way of thinking about this stuff. Yes, for some reason, that really resonates with me, and I can't explain why, but it's
as it happens, back when Fate magazine was on the newsstands,
mm-hmm.
I wrote them a letter that they published, and it was called Quantum Bubbles.
Mm.
And it was what you're talking about, like almost exactly what you just said.
Yeah.
That what you're seeing exists at that moment,
yeah,
but then the bubble pops and we're back to regular reality.
Yep, exactly.
And that to me explains as much as anything, but is how I see phenomena happen.
It's something that's a little hard to refute, at least, you know, like, and like, I just kind of thought of like an analogy, like, I guess in my own career, like I'm an actor, you know, and when I get hired to act on a job, a lot of times I get in my car, I drive to a studio, and then I go to my trailer, I get in wardrobe, go to hair and makeup, where they're making me into a different person. I'm still Steve, mm-hmm. but I'm playing a character named Billy or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then I walk onto the soundstage. Well, I'm still on Earth, but now I've entered a new reality where there's a living room there and there's these characters there who are real people who live on Earth, but they're not at that moment the real people they are. And that's kind of an interesting metaphor. It's like, you know, yes. It's like when you're on stage and you're acting or performing, you're on Earth. Everyone knows you exist, but you're also in another world that people are watching and witnessing. So the paranormal phenomenon is almost like going to a play. And that's where I keep on going back to this performative quality. Yeah. And it's just how I look at it. And obviously it's just, you know, there's probably tons of logic holes in that, but to me, it just feels like it. Cause when I read these stories, I feel like I'm reading little scenes from a film, you know?
And what you're doing when you're acting, you're not speaking as yourself.
Mm-mm.
You're speaking as a character that has a whole different backstory, has a whole different past, present, and future. And yet the words are coming out of your mouth.
You know?
You're making the gestures.
Yeah, and it's
that's not you, but it's you. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like these UFO occupants, or whatever you want to call them, aliens, for lack of a better term. They are almost probably like, I think if I was a betting man, I would guess they're playing characters. And what we are seeing actually is not the real representation of what this phenomenon is. It is a gray alien or a weird looking humanoid or a little tin can beer can or a Bigfoot disappearing into a slab of rock. I think it's a character, it's a role being played by whatever the phenomenon is or represents. But it's actually, you're seeing a character, but you're not seeing the real thing, mm-hmm. you know, so.
Because maybe we couldn't handle the real thing.
Yeah, or maybe the real thing's super boring. Maybe like the real thing, you know, I know they talk about, you know, you guys talk about in Soraya's show a lot about the orb of light being like the raw form of whatever this stuff is. Because you see it, you know, like Soraya likes to say, if you see it in a house, it's a ghost. If you see it in a forest, well, it's like a symptom of Bigfoot. If you see it in the sky, it's a UFO.
And it's always just this ball of light.
Yeah, and it's always there, man. And I swear, even like, you know, I once heard this great NPR story with a hospice worker. And this hospice worker had written a book, and it was all about how she has seen like light phenomenon around people who are dying and have right after they die. And I'm like, well, there's light phenomenon again in the death process. So maybe Josh Cushion's right.
yes. Indeed. Yeah. And that, you know, it's almost like that little ball of light would be the soul once it's left the body.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe what we were seeing, our souls moving about.
Right.
Astrally traveling, having out-of-body experience, that right. type of thing.
Right.
One of, and I won't say beliefs, but one of my ideas is that we, bear with me for a second, that the visitors, to the extent that are often are aliens, but they're not coming here physically.
Yeah.
They're coming here spiritually.
Yeah.
They can't beat the, you know, there's no hyperdrive. There's no warp right. speed. That never pans out. They don't need that because they've learned to travel outside of their body. And so they can come here because they can go anywhere. Once you're not in a physical state, you're not bound by the laws of physics.
Right.
So you don't have to get in a nuts and bolts craft and drive at light speed for 10 years to get anywhere.
Right, right, right.
You go into your trance state and you're there.
Yeah. They're like little projections.
Yeah, exactly. And that makes, and I've, you know, the contactees have a number of problems, but it makes the idea that they would appear as like a handsome blonde guy that yeah. just, you know, that, oh yeah, by the way, I'm from Venus.
Yeah, but, exactly.
You know, and their message, and I got a chance to talk about this on Conspiranormal one time. And I said, you look at the message of the contactees, Adamski and all the rest, and they were very much warning against nuclear war.
Yep.
Well, if you put it in the context of how close we were to having an all-out nuclear war, it seems like there might be more to that. Like, that might yeah. be real, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
To some extent,
yep.
anyway.
Yep, yep.
And I was kind of blown away doing the research for it because I knew that, you know, they considered using nuclear weapons. I didn't realize how much of a push there was on the American side.
Mm-hmm.
Let alone the Soviets, who are also yep. pushing the other way. But yep. Curtis LeMay, the first general of the Air Force, he wrote up a detailed description of, we should drop 137 atomic bombs in the Soviet Union in a first strike. And I said, so of course he was relieved of command and put in a mental hospital. No, yeah. he was promoted. He became the first general of the Air Force.
Fail upward.
Yes. And he wanted to launch World War III.
Oh God.
In a first strike attack. And it's like, and this was not considered insane.
Yeah.
And General Douglas MacArthur, who's generally considered a hero, wanted to do the same thing. He wanted Korea to be just the opening of World War III. And to just drop scores of atomic bombs on China and move into Russia as well. And I mean, these guys are talking, you know, about potentially, you know, full-on worldwide nuclear war. And that was considered sane conversation by military leaders.
That was smart strategy.
Yes. And so the idea that, you know, these beings show up and are like, don't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense to me. You know,
it does.
It might be either actual beings or some collective unconscious saying, no, we need to stop this. We need to stop it right now.
Yeah. You know? Right. Right. I mean, like, it's, that is crazy. Yeah. Because when you read back in history, even aside from those, like, kind of like, you know, cowboy generals who were like, let's just get it over with. Amazing. there were a number of close calls in the late 70s and 80s just from like radar errors and different things. Like there was like a flock of birds once, and then they almost like launched nukes from like Montana. So like Russians did it. And like, you know, but like we were just, you know, developing new and better radar. But man, there was a handful of like real close calls.
Yes. There's I remember reading the Soviet officer that saved the world was like roughly the title of the article. And it was a he's a Soviet Air Force officer, and he has to make the decision. Is this an American attack? And I think it was geese. Okay. And he decided, despite what the radar looks like, we're not going to launch a retaliatory strike. And that saved the world. And it was like, wow, how close do we really come?
Well, yeah, I mean, and like every expert says, if one bomb is dropped, then the world's over.
Oh, all hell
That's
breaks
it.
loose.
That's it. There is no such thing as World War III when you have multiple nations who have nukes. It's just there's no winning a World War III because
No.
someone will use it. So while we're closer to every day towards some kind of like global conflict, that just means we're closer to extinction. I feel like, I mean, like this is serious stuff. We're dealing a serious time in history right now, and we're like on the precipice of like because like especially with technology and so many nations now having a huge nuclear,
Half the
arsenal,
countries in the world either have them or could make them just
or
anytime
could
they
make
wanted.
them. I know. So it's like, I mean,
We formed a
it's
firing
troubling.
squad in the circle.
We did.
And
We absolutely did.
everybody needs to calm way down.
Way down, chill out, folks. We're talking about like
Anybody do
nuke.
anything stupid,
Yeah, we're talking about annihilation here. So chill. Read a UFO book, man.
On that note, we should probably wrap this up.
This has been
But
so much fun. First, I just want
oh
to say thank you.
yes.
I've heard you on so many podcasts and listened to your podcast. I really love it. And you are such a fresh mind in this stuff. I always enjoy hearing you. So this has been a real pleasure, bud.
Oh, well, thanks a lot, Steve. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, man.
And this will certainly not be the last time
Oh,
that I want
please.
to have you on, and I want to
Well,
be
I'd
on
love
your
to have
show.
you. I want you to come talk Weird Wisconsin on my show, like very soon. Like
I
maybe,
would love that.
yeah, I'll hit you up some dates soon. So
We can do that.
yeah.
Absolutely. All right.
Good.
Well, this is the weird part. I'm Vincent Treewell. My special guest has been Mr. Steve Berg. Where can people find you, Steve?
Yeah, so I have a podcast called High Strangeness, and then it's HI comma strangeness, like I'm saying hello to it. And then on social media is everywhere. I'm Bergmaster 5000, so you can find me there. But yeah, check it out, and you'll be hearing Vincent on probably next month. So tune into that, and I want everyone to have a great dinner tonight. Thank you.
Thank you for listening and good night.
Everything get loaded?